If you or someone you know is struggling with alcoholism or addiction, do not hesitate to reach out for help. You can find numerous free resources on our website, thebeginagainpodcast.com, and there are tons of resources and support networks available online, in person, or just a phone call away. You don't have to face this challenge alone. Welcome to the Begin Again Podcast. I'm your host, Gary Menkes. On the Begin Again Podcast, we delve into the inspiring journeys of individuals who have overcome alcoholism and addiction and emerged as true trailblazers in entrepreneurship, business, sports, and beyond. Through authentic, uplifting, and profound conversations with our guests, we aim to shatter the stigma surrounding addiction and demonstrate that recovery can be a catalyst for remarkable success, strength, and resilience. We firmly believe that by listening to these accounts, you will be empowered to unlock your own potential, instigate positive change in your life, and contribute to the creation of a better world. So, get ready to be inspired and embark on your own personal journey of growth with the Begin Again Podcast. Welcome back to the Begin Again Podcast. I'm your host, Gary Menkes, and joining us today is someone I've been following since I found this incredible Recover Out Loud movement, Garrett McLendon. Garrett was raised in a broken home by a single mom who struggled with addiction and drug dealer boyfriends. This early exposure into the dark world of drugs and alcohol abuse eventually led him to dropping out of school, which started his descent into the depths of a hardcore meth and heroin addiction. But after multiple stints in jails and treatment centers, Garrett's life underwent a remarkable transformation, a spiritual awakening formed and rooted in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Today, this man is a single father, fully devoted to his children, all while on a mission to help others achieve sobriety and become a force in the Recover Out Loud movement. Garrett, thank you for being here, man. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, man. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure. What a great introduction. Can you read that again for me?
Let's do it. No, man, like I said offline, I've been following you once, you know, as soon as I got to this, it's a movement, right? This Recover Out Loud is a movement, and I'm grateful to be a part of it. I'm a little newer to it, but you're one of the first guys I found. You know, you're always sharing your story, and it's an incredible story. And I'm grateful you're here to share it with our audience too. So let's kick it off, man. Let's kick it off, man.
You know, my name is Garrett. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a drug addict. I'm every kind of addicted to everything that, you know, was affecting me from the neck up. And I'm just sharing a general way what it was like, what happened, what my life is like now. I always want, this is the thing that's been on my mind lately, man. This is where I'm going to go. I'm just going to go. I like to keep in the present. A couple things I want to get out of the way is.
Being honest.
This is a real thing, man. And I like to connect with the people, like in an audience, I get the connection with people. I can look, my eyes are in a crowd of 100 or 200 or something like that. Like I really get to see like the emotions and stuff that I bring. And then sometimes I get in a small crowd and it's a little different. It's getting easier now coming over on the laptop. But I'll tell you this, I was talking to somebody this morning. And we're always talking about like that, you know, like it's like everybody's on a journey, but they're not going nowhere. You know, everybody's on a journey, but they're not going nowhere. And I remember that this just this morning and yesterday too as well. And then I have a group chat. I reach out to some people, and I remember that moment right after I got done with my morning. Like I got some meditation books and prayer books, and there was for a split second, man, that there's this moment, man, a millisecond, a second or two, but I open my eyes and I come out of this prayer and I take this deep breath, man. And that moment, man, like that's that freedom you get from here, man. And doing the work here around here, like for so long, man, for so long, I just wanted that. I wanted to be able to close my eyes and open my eyes and be present in the moment I was in and want to be in that moment. And today, man, when I open my, like when I wake up in the morning and I grab a cup of coffee and I do this morning ritual of prayer books and recovery books, man, and it gets deep. I put some text. I reach out to other people, you know, and I put this power in them, and I do a gratitude list, and I come out of this. I do a prayer, man, and I come out, man. It's like that moment. like not in the future, not in the past. I'm in this present moment, man, is everything. And I'd love to start off like this, is the devil was on one side and like God was on one side, and this guy was in his casket and he was standing there, and he comes out of the casket, and the devil looks at the God and God looks at the devil, and they go their separate ways, and the devil's walking, and he looks at one of his disciples. He's like, man, I forgot something back there. And he walks back there, and the guy who just came out of the casket is sitting there, and he's like, no. And he's like, hey, I didn't make a decision. I didn't make a decision, you know. And he leans up against this fence, and the devil looks him right in the eyes, and he says, he's like, I know you didn't make a decision. He's all, but that fence you're leaning on belongs to me, so you might as well go ahead and come with me. And for so long, that's how I live. Is that I lived on this fence of a life. I never made a decision. I was a product of my environment and everything that went on around it. And I just went deeper and deeper into this rabbit hole. And I was comfortable living in this way. And I'll talk about this. I'll talk about what it was like for me as we kids, we grow up. Like I saw this thing today as well, man. And I said, how many times did you tell the people around you today that you actually love them? And how many times today does someone actually tell you they love you? No, and man, I was just with my son, and I just dropped him off, man. And he, we have this thing that you get from, from toys, from Buzz and, Buzz Lightyear, and the cowboy. We touch our fingers together, and we're like to infinity and beyond. And he goes, Dad, I love you, man. And once again, my breath gets taken away because I never had those moments with my dad that I can remember. And I was sitting there thinking about, like, did my mom ever tell me? I know, like, I wrote my mom many times in prison and over and over and over from all these choices I was making. And we write, I love you. But did we ever go do a verbal, I love you? I have to think about this. And I grew up, man. I grew up, I'm from Antelope Valley, Palmdale, Lancaster, Quartzsill, Antelope Bakers, Roseman, Lake LA, anywhere out there. I was in all of it. I stopped going to high school in the ninth grade. By that time, I was already drinking and using methamphetamine. Back then, it was speed. By the time I was 15, 16 years old, I dropped out of high school. I was more and more onto the way of the street, living on the streets. And it wasn't like I could have went home and I could have went to sleep. And like I go home every few weeks, and I'll let you know what my home looks like. And it's just how I grew up. It doesn't mean that it's your story. Like people, they don't go to jail. They don't go to prison. They don't go to treatment centers. They don't come from broken homes. And that, like this saying goes, it's lived in this place called a little Alcatraz. And my mom, my grandma, my uncle, my cousin, my little sister, dogs and animals. In the backyard was a lot of, lots of addicts and homeless people all through the complex. And like the whole backyard was just like a tent city. In the front yard and the backyard, it was all just a lot of different people, a lot of different mixes. And I hung out in these apartment complexes. And what I did is I learned how to make a couple dollars off selling drugs, and I supported my habit, and I was able to get stuff that I never had growing up, because I at this point I couldn't ask my dad because of the shame and the guilt and everything for the stuff was already kicking in. And for my mom, she doesn't have it, so I went and asked her, and I went out. By the time I was 18, I did some YA stuff, and by the time I was 19, I was going into the county jails. And by the time I was 21, I was hitting the state penitentiary. And by the time I was 23, I was having my first kid. And I really thought, man, I sit there and I, by this time, this is, you go from like, I did a little bit like some little like modeling thing or something as a kid, I was a good looking. And by this time, 18, 19 years old, I got no teeth. They called me in prison. They called me P38, which is a can opener, because I got one and a half teeth, in the front. And my hair is cracked. I don't know nothing about hygiene because I never had really a father figure to teach me about hygiene, about a loofah and soap and brushing your teeth every day. Like when you're in an addict's, household. I like that stuff's a luxury to have, you know. Like I remember my mom shaving a bar of soap and putting it in water into another bottle and making it like a laundry soap, you know. And at 23, having this little, you know, I got this girl pregnant. I'm coming out of prison, and I'm addicted to drugs, man. And every time I take a drink, the drink takes me. And every time I take a hit, you know, I take a drink. And every time I take a drink, I take a hit. And you know, I know this is that when that little girl was being born, I left that hospital, went and got loaded, had every intention inside me to be there for this. For what was about to happen, for the birth of my first child, man. Like I the love and everything inside me. Like you love, like I, it's so crazy. Like you love something so much, man. And then, but then that disease and the obsession and all this stuff kicks in, man. And like you have to feed it. Like I had to feed it, and I went and feed it every single time. And you know, all those high school friends that I knew, I didn't hang out with them. I hung out with drug dealers and gangsters and people of that sort, you know. And every now and then I would end up hanging out with the homeless in the homeless camps with the homeless people out there, just because it was easy living. Not a worry that not a worry on my mind. I'd just be out there getting loaded with the rest of them. And by the time I'm you know, and people told me like, hey, you're gonna go, you know, you're gonna be in you know, you're gonna end up in prison, or you're going to end up in jail. And it didn't scare me. Sometimes I think that it saved me for the most part. You know, I was out there on this deathbed. Like I wanted to do nothing, but I just wanted to do nothing but die. You know, I'm going to court, and they're like saying things like, you're a threat to society. You know, people like you don't ever change. And, you know, and I have now I have this daughter. I can't be a dad to her. All the responsibilities on my parents and the kids' moms. And I'm out there, and I'm thinking I'm living my best life because I got a, you know, I got a car but no license. You know, I got the car stolen. I got a house that I just sort of just squatted in. You know, and I'm renting out rooms, and my life is mess emotionally, spiritually, and mentally. I'm done. And I can't stop.
And how old are you? How old are you at this point right now? Did you say you were 23?
I'm about 23 right now. I'm
About 20.
23. I've been for this is about 10 years of me being an active addiction and drinking and it, you know, and you know, like I was one of those ones that like I'll be like, I'll never smoke it, and I smoked it. I'll never shoot it. And I shot it, and then I was like, I for sure not gonna, you know, get addicted. Like I'll just do heroin once or twice, and I'll never. I don't like heroin, and I ended up strung out on heroin, and it goes like this for me, man. Is that my life was utterly a wreck in every single which way possible, from the moment I got out of jail to the moment I went right back in. I had no structure, no role models, no nothing. Like I only knew how to get out. Get loaded, try to support my habit, and I end up. I kept on doing the same thing and getting the same results, and this life of insanity. For instance, I wobble that fence. Like I think, like I like I couldn't get a drive. But at this point, I had 168. I had like 160 traffic tickets. I never had a driver's license. I dropped out of school. Like I try to. I get a job, but you know, but once again, like you get a job and you get a couple paychecks, and I'm. And I don't make it back, you know. I get loaded one more time, and the only thing I got is excuses. And for the most part, I never make it to the parole office. I could never get a clean test. I could never give a an address to, you know, to have, you know, to have parole even come to. And I never wanted treatment or to get right. I just figured that, you know. That was my cycle. I'd get out, run till the wheels fall off, and I go back into jail. And as I tell people, it's prison preserved. I am prison preserved. And I'll say this is in 2012. So this is my daughter's probably 6 years old, seven. I can't stay out of jail. The longest I stayed out of jail in the next 15 years, the next 10 years is 6 months, 6, 7 months. And I cannot stop, man. I never, like, from this point, like, I started shooting dope inside the prison system. I stuck a needle in my arm. I got out of jail once again. And what it did is I thought it would be one of those things that I can only do in the prison system. But I got out and I self-will. And next thing you know, I put a needle in my arm. And I'll tell you what happened for me is like this, man. I didn't care about my family. I didn't care about my kids. The only thing I cared about was getting loaded in any way which possible. I didn't care if I had to rob you. I didn't care about what lies I had to tell you. What form of manipulation that ever comes with an addict to get loaded is what I pulled through. And in 2012, I get arrested. And I only been out for by about 30 days, 45 days. I'm getting taken in on another violation. And for some reason, they throw me in this program. It's a treatment center. And my first interaction with the treatment center was Acton Treatment Center. And I remember going in front of a judge, and he was like, you need to go to this place called Acton and check in. And I drove myself to this treatment center, and I commenced to go up there and check in with a piece of paper. And they told me things like, we have a bed for you. I said, cool, let me go grab my stuff out of the car. And I walked out, jumped in my car, and I left. And I called somebody. I was like, so crazy, they wanted me to stay there, like, you know, that's not happening, you know. And my very first familiarization with the program of Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous was on the 4-yard of Tatchby State Prison. They brought these panels in, and this guy named Billy was just a normal Joe that I think I sold drugs to him on the streets, and he was in this prison. And he'd come get me, you know, and he'd be like, man, let's go check this thing out. And he'd take me into these meetings or panels of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I sit there in the back, and I would identify with everything that these people say. And I felt it, man, like the sincerity and the love and all this stuff. But it never stuck, man. The seed was planted, but it was never watered.
Yeah.
In 2011, or it must have been 2011, I get out from another term. I'm doing everything, putting needles in my arms, and I'm running the streets. I don't go home. I just stay on the streets, house to house, with the bag, and running around, hiding, and thinking I'm hip, slick, and cool. And I get pulled over, and I go to this treatment center. It's in Pomona, California. It was the first treatment center I ever was at, and I met some very, very, very cool people, man, that sort of just shaped this way. And I loved it, man. And like it moved, but you know, I had a lot of wreckage at this point. Mm-hmm. And what I did is I had to turn myself in the jail. And it was the weekend after Cinco de Mayo in 2012. And I turned myself in the jail, or 2011, 12. And it was the first time I ever walked into a jail system or a courthouse sober.
Mm-hmm.
And something happened, man. Like something happened. And I remember sitting there as I thought I was going to get out, because it was only traffic tickets. You know, a guy on my record, this is what they say. They say, guys like you don't change. That we always have a home for people like you, because guys like you don't change. And I end up in the back, cuffed up one more time, and sitting in this concrete cell. You know, waiting to go downstairs and see with, you know, my people to catch this bus back in the county jail. And man, it's like I had a moment of clarity, man, of like how done I was on the inside. Like I really just felt like, man, like I was done. I went downstairs and I went to the county jail. And even after that, man, they talk about having that self-defense against that first drink, hit or fix. It has to come from something. Like, you can have enough program in you, but if you don't have a little bit of God in you, then you know, because I wasn't thinking about calling a sponsor or calling somebody to help me. What I did is I called a connection, and I got loaded. Despite everything that I had going on in my life, man, I immediately stuck a needle in my arm. 4 days later, I ended up right back in the jail. And as I say, like when I come out of it feeling remorseful and all this stuff, like what happened? I was just sober. And there it was. I get loaded one more time, and I get out of that jail. I get out of jail one more time off the stand. It's the end of 2012, and it's coming into the beginning, and I'm just about to take my anniversary, on Valentine's Day of 2012, Valentine's Day of 2013. I've been out of jail for about 45 days. I'm a wreck mentally, spiritually, physically. You know, clothes don't fit, wandering the streets. By this time, I just gave up on any family and friends and anybody like that. Like the, you know, my best motto, my best way of thinking is this, that if I can sleep for a day and get some food in me, everything will be all right. You know, that was my, like, damn, I just need to get some sleep, man, and everything will be all right. 5:30 in that morning, I'm in a shootout on the streets, and I'm getting shot at on the streets. And I wish one of the bullets would just take my life away. When I drink and when I use, what happens to me is I just feel like dying. God had another plan. I get arrested that night. I call that person. All of us people like to call, man. All those gangsters call. I call my mom. I'm like, Mom, you know, I get loaded with my mom on Valentine's Day. I'm seeking revenge. All I could think about is obsessed about what just happened this morning. And I get loaded with my mom, and I get dropped off at this liquor store. At the liquor store, I get me some liquor, and I persist to go get loaded one more time. And off-duty officer recognizes me, and boom, what happens is they come in every door and every window, and they arrest me one more time. A guy like me being arrested is just being arrested, right? You know, and I go into county jail, and county jail is nothing. It's only scary the first time. On March 17th of 2013, I arrive in my another treatment center, and like I didn't pick the day. It's just the day that landed. I don't count this time I was in county jail because I just ate like I was eating happy cards, and I was drinking hand sanitizer with Top Ramen packets on it, and here I am, man. I'm alone. I'm afraid. I'm scared. Like all everything that I can think of, all these emotions that go through my mind that I didn't recognize at those times. I'm sitting in the lobby of this treatment center, the same way I was feeling inside the jail. I'm feeling now alone. I'm afraid, scared. Like I don't know. Like I don't know. Like I'm nervous, but you know, like fake it till you make it type scenario. And this guy that I knew comes through. His name's Levi, and Levi comes over and he gives me this big old warm welcoming hug, and he's like, Garrett, man, he's like, so good to see you, big bro. He's like, I hope you stay. And man, it was like something went over me, and like I made that decision, man. That decision I talked about in the beginning, which is very important, man, because a lot of times the scenario I was in, or the conditions of my life always made these decisions for me, you know. And I walk into this office, and it has a counselor there, and she says, I'll give you 24 hours, man. I think it was like the first time, man, I honestly, very, like, I deep down inside me, man, like this thought, man, and I said, I made this decision, and I said, I'm gonna stay. Man, for anybody here, man, like if your kids ain't talking to you, you know, like if you, like I really thought, like I never thought, I just, like I never thought, like I have a relationship with my daughter, you know, I for sure, or with my parents, or my dad, or my sisters, like I thought I'd done so much damage. I thought I'd done so much damage that I was just going to, I'm not like I literally thought I was going to change my last name and just start a new life. And it wasn't about anything they were living in. It was all the shame and the guilt and all this stuff. It was all the stuff that I'd done to myself that I was reflecting out on everybody else. And it kept me in this small little circle of just like, man, I don't want to hurt nobody else. I don't want to betray nobody else. I'm tired of manipulating people. Like you go through all these emotions, man, and all this hurt and all this pain. And I met this lady, man. Her name was Dolores Thomas. I love her to this day, man. I still talk to her to this day. And there was something inside of her, man, that filled a piece of me, man. A connection was brought together. And she knew how to speak to me in words that were loving and smooth and kind. Just let me know, man, that I, you know, people like us ain't bad people. If you're out there and you're listening to this, man, and you've done so much work, and like you, and you think you're a bad person, we're not bad people.
Nope.
We're on drugs and we're on alcohol and we've been up for days on end. We're bad people because we make these choices based on self. And the selfish decision, the selfish decision that I always make was to get loaded over everything. And that costed me that relationship with my daughter, mother, father, sisters. work, anything else, man, that I had going on in my life. And Dolores Thomas, man, like I stayed in this, man. Like what happened is like what happened for everybody, because stuff just keeps on happening for me. And I'm not talking about for the materialistic stuff that I have in my life. I'm talking about what happens for me, man, is that thing what I was talking about. And again, in the beginning, like all we want to do is, man, I want to be free from the bondage of self. And like that, like, what is it, man? Like, what is it? Like, for a lot of people too, man, that I talk to and stuff, and they're like, and they're always like, they're always like, well, what happened? Like, what happened? The thing is, man, is like, is see, I want freedom from the bondage of self, because my worst problem and everything in it, man, is always from me and what I want, what I can get, man. And it all roots down to this thing, man. I'm from the drug and alcohol, the lifestyle that we live, man. I was selfish and self-centered, because that's all I want. It was me. And once I got taken care of, then I could take care of you guys. And what I learned here, man, is that the less of me I think of, the better everything in my life is around it, man. And I was in a treatment center for 13 months. I did every thing that I was told, man. I'm 13 to 16 months. I was in there. Like I could tell you a list of firsts, man. And to this day, my first little job, my first bike sickle that I bought with my own money, like my taking care of my first like tickets, that going to DUI classes and going, and like, I had so much Caltrans and community service, and I just, like, it was like a job, thank goodness. See, like, I used to remember sitting there thinking, like, damn, thank goodness I had that much time inside of a place like that, that allowed me to take care of all that community service, all that Caltrans work, able to go to these classes, DUI classes, because believe me, they you go, and it allowed me to take care of all this stuff, man. I remember walking out of the DMV thinking that, since I was in jail for fucking 10 years, that like, or 7 years, like all these tickets would just be off my record. I figured that would be the state,
Yeah.
And I remember I was sitting there lying at the DMV, and they're like, sir, can I filled out the paperwork, for a driver's license. I'm just like, man, this is, God is good, right? And I go up to the counter, and she's like, man, can you come over to the side? And I automatically think, well, she must think I'm good looking or something, man. I'm gonna go to the fucking, no, I'll definitely go to this. Yeah, what can sidebar, right? And she's like, are you really here to get your driver's license? Like, there is a list of stuff that you have to take before you can even think about getting a driver's license. And this is what happens, is for an alcoholic mind like mine, man, is I sat there, and what I did is I looked at this big old list that was and what it happens is I come in here and I have this record, I have this list of stuff, man, that I feel that I have to take care of, that puts me in a level playing field. And I want to go from, like, see I'm 33 years old. I never had a driver's license, and I want to immediately get my driver's license.
Yeah.
And the work that you have to put in right there, that little bit of work, man, like, I called up my sponsor, and I was like, man, I'm never going to get a driver's license, right? Because what happens is my brain, the way I think is that I think that I look at the whole package. I look at everything at once, and I'm thinking, damn, I can't do five things at once, right? And he told me the simplest thing, man. He's like, why don't you pick the easiest thing off that list, and you just start there. You're just like, man, that's that Jedi stuff, man, that you cannot. Jedi. That's that Jedi stuff,
that
right?
Mind trick right there.
Because I didn't know I was able to do one thing at a time. Like, I always had to do everything at one time.
Yeah, I get that. I do.
Right?
100%.
100%, man. And I'm going to tell you, man, that little bit I put in for this work, man, I had that counselor, man. And I absolutely love speaking, man, on every level of on a stage, on a camera, or wherever I can, man. It's that powerfulness. And I wasn't always like that. What happened is Dolores, saw me and the way I spoke and where I come from, and maybe she saw something in me like I never saw myself, and she put me in a position to do that.
Amazing.
And she asked afterwards, she's like, how did that feel? So I was pissed, man. I'm gonna tell you all the way up to it. And when I sat down into this auditorium and all these people were there, I was scared and nervous, and all these emotions I didn't know how to identify with were just at me. And I took a deep breath, man. And I said a quick prayer, and I went out from there. And man, that feeling was so good, man. So good. It was that powerful, that to carry a message with carries depth and weight, that the only thing that people want to know is the truth about us, of where we come from, what we did, and the solution of how we got out, man. Like the solution, man. We Everybody got problems, but not everybody got solutions to those problems. And all I can do is talk from my experience of everything I went through and gone through, and to be able to share with you like an open book, man, of the pain, the joys, and the pain, and the life experiences I get, man, here in recovery. And I get to share this stuff. And I was thinking that, man, like, I did all this stuff inside. What I did in treatment, man, as I finally got to a point where I thought I was on level playing field. I didn't leave there. I didn't have a car. I didn't have a driver's license. I was still on parole. I still was and all this stuff. And I was working at this job, getting nothing. I was riding a bike in a Metrolink, like I felt like I was below anybody else, man.
Yeah.
And what helps, man, is doing service work inside the program. I started getting busy, and I stopped thinking about me. I stopped thinking about me so much, and I stopped thinking about me less and you more. And stuff just started, man, as time goes by, and I didn't pick up a drink, hit or fix, man, and I continued to do all this small stuff, man. My life just continually just kept on getting better and better, man. And those relationships with that little daughter, like my dad came back in my life, my stepmom, my sisters, my mom, like my daughter, man. Like, I love her, man. Like, she like they all came back in my life. And man, and I it doesn't it, all that stuff that happened before them, man, didn't matter. It only matters what I'm doing now today.
Amen. You said something. Well, you said so much, man. And in fact, about your children, I saw just today on Instagram, your little boy, you wore the same boots as his dad, right? You got the same boots. I saw that today. I thought that was beautiful, man. I mean, talk about gratitude, right? That's not something you had years ago. And look at where you are today. Your boy wants to be just like his dad, as he should. And you said so much, but there was one thing you said along the way as you were getting closer. It seems like you said you need a little God, you need to have a little God in your life. I mean, the story with Dolores, and you have that moment where you say, you made this decision, right? But I'm seeing come through to you. I'm seeing you're finding a higher power in these moments here. Can you put a finger on or let us know when did God really, how do you see when God really entered your life and when you made that decision?
It tells me in the book that I got to continue to seek God out. And so what I do on a daily basis is I continue to seek God out. I don't know what that, like, your conception of God and my conception of God, or I just know that there is God. I'm not going to be in a battlefield with somebody. I'm 100% believe in God. And
Amen. Me and you both.
amen. And And I'm going to tell you this, from that moment I walked into that treatment center, into that office, and I made that decision, God, we'll take it back to when I was getting shot at on February 14th of 2013. I was in the street, man. I believed God had to have been somewhere, that God, like, you see those pictures with people and God protecting them, like, and that's just how everywhere down my life, man. But see, like, until you come to that, until you come to that conclusion, or do you come to this idea that God's that I that like I believe in God, and God's been there for me, and that He loves me, man. Like, all the God stuff's not gonna make sense. Like, I come here to Alcoholics. I didn't come like I didn't come here. I arrived there. I made that decision, but I didn't come for a relationship with God. I didn't come for like the my family or my daughter. Like, I literally wanted, I remember in the bathroom at my mom's house, she had like the Serenity Prayer on this little scroll that was like porcelain on the counter. And I remember shooting dope on her toilet. And I'm sitting there, and I remember, like, as I was falling out, man, I'd just be stuck on that prayer. And I remember being inside a jail, man, and we'd be saying that prayer as we spread at night, or like, man, just thinking myself, like, man, tomorrow, like, something's gonna happen, and we know what's gonna happen. Like, you just pray. Like, God's always been there, man. Like, but this is a thing. It's either He is, or He isn't. Like, you're either in this program or you're not. Like, you either believe God or you don't. There is no middle of the road solutions into a 12-step program, right?
No.
You don't get to take, you don't, we don't just get to take the, we don't get to just come, like, you, there is to take, you still come in here and we still give, you can't just come in here and just, you come in here and you take and you take and you take and you take, but you sooner or later, like, it doesn't work out, man. You don't stay.
No.
Like, God, yeah, I'm gonna tell you exactly what God is for me, man. Is that I didn't come in a believer. I wasn't like into this and all this stuff. I'm gonna tell you this, that the more I help people here in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous, the more that I watch their life and God witness their how they're I watch these people, these guys. I help lots and lots of guys, and the more I sit there with these people and I sit there with the two of us reading a book, whether it's in the park or in my truck or on my job site or in the street or at a meeting or wherever the hell it may be, man, because I'm like, pull the book out, man. Let's read it. I'm gonna tell you that every single time that I do that, man, it seems that there's a layer ripped off between the both of us, and there's a God exposed, and that our connection comes stronger and stronger and stronger. And I know for me that the more I'm in that book and I'm talking about God and I'm seeking that God on a daily basis, man, that the more and more that He will reveal Himself to me, and He reveals Himself to me in another human being. Because I don't learn, doing the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous is a good start. It's a good start. But what it is it's a lesson. What I do is I must practice, and I must take other people through the steps. And the more I'm able to take other people through the steps, God brings Himself through me, and He works through me through other people every single time, man. And then when it talks about those spiritual experiences you get to experience, man, you ever sat there with somebody else that you helped?
Absolutely.
They were talking about their life was so doomed, and you were a witness, and you actually probably thought, you know what? Their life is effed up too. Mm-hmm. When that person wholesomely and open and honestly makes a decision and makes that choice to come and do a little bit more work on this side, to take away that pride and the prejudice and everything that I thought that's keeping myself away from a connection from God. Like, I still want to be hard, or I still want to hold on to this, and I want to hold on to that, man. Like they tell me, you have to stop holding on and let everything go. And the more I let go, the more God is exposed to me, man. Like, I continue, man, just like you said, this morning, I'll tell you a couple things that just today that happened for me, man.
Yeah, let's hear it.
All right. 100% this morning, man, when my son was like, Dad, I want to wear boots like you. And we put our boots on. I'm going to tell you, man, I sit there it's those moments that money cannot buy.
Absolutely.
100%, you cannot put a price tag on that. There was a thing by my son's school, and they closed the whole area off because some guy was waving a machete or something like that. And I couldn't get over there. I had to walk two blocks in which they're like, we'll go get your son and escort him to you. Right. Fucking man. And all right, sir. Yes, sir. Right. And the cops go and get my son, and they bring him out to me. My son recognizes me today, and he walked up to me with the cop, man. And he says, I love you, Dad.
Oh, man.
I love you, Dad. Moments like that, man, you cannot put a price tag on. That stuff comes from the principles and from the stuff that you learn and here in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, man, it's one alcoholic teaching another, or one addict teaching another. It all comes down to like one person helping another. And I tell you, man, that God reveals Himself to me every single time in the work here in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Not in like it's cool. Like I was thinking about this thing the other day too. Was we get these gym memberships, you know, and we go to the gym, and like the gym is cool. Like we go to the gym and say we work out all the time, you know, but like the two part of it, right, is that working out only gets you so far. Because if you're not dieting and eating right, man, you're sort of just like wasting it, you know. Sort of like, oh, I go to the gym, but like I fucking just ate, you know, everything in sight. So like, what are you really going to the gym for, right? What's your goal, right? And then, and like, we come here to Alcoholics Anonymous, right? We come into a 12-step program, and like people are like, oh, I gone to meetings, and I was a service and all this stuff, but I haven't done this, but I haven't done the steps,
Work,
right?
you do the work.
It's the unity, service, and recovery that makes that triangle, man. And it's all of it that makes you, that puts you in the center of it. And see, I have to stay, like, for a person like me, man, I know what it feels like to drift off a little bit and be to the side and like, you know, and stop. See, like, when, like, what's your number one priority? What's your primary purpose? You know, like, do you have a home group? You know, are you being of service? Like all this stuff that to some people, like they don't mean nothing, but to me, they mean everything, right? I talk about this like freedom to discipline. Like, you know, I was a guy that I lived an undisciplined life. I got disciplined in the prison system, and it taught me how to live a structured life. And like, how can I? And people are like, oh, I want to forget about my prison time. I want to forget about the jail time. I want to forget. I don't. See, that structure, what it taught me, the basics of waking up in the morning, you know, and going to a job, and coming home and working out, and it's sort of like today is like my routine of life, because what it taught me is a routine, man. And I got a routine of life. Like I wake up, man. I wake up in the morning. I live a disciplined life. I'm not saying I'm so disciplined that I got to be like this, but I got to like I work out. And I diet, man. I work 12 steps, and I go to meetings, and I help other alcoholics, right? Because I don't want the half-assed results that just come from just doing half-assed, you know. Half measures avails us nothing. You know what I'm saying? We have to get into that work. You know, you ever met people at meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and like they're like there and there, but like they're still angry. They're still full of hate. Like everything bothers them. They're like the one that just go to meetings. Right, they're not into the service because they don't like people. They don't have a sponsor because they haven't found the right one to work with them yet. See, I'm one of these things. Like I had to set all that stuff. Like I was out, man. I've been in Dominican Republic and Hawaii and Mexico. I've been on these surfboards out in the water, man. Like I was in prison, and I was in this cell, man. And this guy drew this mural on the cell of like a cliff with the. With the hammock on the two palm trees, with the most beautiful. It's like he used the Kool-Aid as like the to make the sunset, you know, that to make the sunset. Oh, like it was beautiful. I'm gonna tell you, I was in Waikiki out there, a dragon head out there on the beach in the water, about, I don't know, 100 yards or so like that. I'm gonna tell you, with the light mist going down, and what I look is, when I see on my cliff, I see that damn hammock, dude. And that is that God, or is that God? See, like, see. See, I put my day, I'm sitting there, I put my hands down on my board, and I pray, man. And I'm gonna tell you, that same moment I talked about in the beginning, when I lift my head up, man, I'm sitting there, I'm on my board, and I lift my head up, man, and I'm in that moment right there, man. And it's like almost like it's like I want to cry with gratitude for my life today, man. Like I don't know how to express it. Like I cannot express it. But I'm gonna tell you how I can express it, is I can express it by grabbing another guy who is desperate, who thinks that, man, you know what, man, I'll never talk to my daughter. Like I don't, my dad will never, never forgive me. My mom, like I don't know if I can ever love her because she's an addict and all this stuff. Like my sisters, like I don't know if I ever get a job. I don't know if I'll ever be a part of society. See, I took in guys, man, and I restored them back. But see, if I say I restored him back, I can't, man. God restored him back. The only thing I did, man, is I brought him to the stream of life to drink. And at the very best, what is it? What is it around here, man? Is that I'm an example. Like sometimes, man, like what examples do you got in your life? Who are you following, man? Are you structured? I mean, like, how free do you want to be in your life, man? Like, and it's an ongoing thing, man. It's an ongoing thing, man. And this is another thing too, man. It's an ongoing thing. It's not how much. I'm at this point now. It's like not how much more I got. It's how much less. how much less of Garrett, man. Like, I've been holding on to this stuff, man. Like, make a decision, right? And and man, I still to this day, I come across these problems, and I get in the twofold, I get in the thing, and I call some puppy buddy, I write it down, I do all this stuff, man, and they're like, and they tell me some stuff, like stuff that you don't want to hear, like, why are you holding on to it? And you're like, damn, am I holding on to it? If I thoroughly and honestly, if I honestly and thoroughly done my third step, man, if I turn my will, my life over to the care of God, if I understand it on a daily basis, not like, oh, I did that last week, or I did that a month, oh, I did that when I did my third step, right, type
right.
thing. Like,
Every day.
if I'm doing this on a daily basis, man, see, I can't be upset if you want to say bad stuff or stuff that upsets me happens in my life today, I can't be mad, because if I turn my will and my life over to the care of God, God is making this stuff happen to me for a reason. And the thing is what I don't know is I don't know the reason why God is making it happen. And sometimes not knowing, man, as addicts and alcoholics, what we wanted to, I always wanted to know the next move, man.
Right.
And now I got to have this blind faith in life, man. And I got to be happy, joyous, and free, whether it's a good day or a bad day. Like, man, I, like my dad, like I created this relationship with my dad, and my dad passed away, man. And man, it's so sad, man. It, like it, like that, that, that there's something inside of you that breaks that I can't, if you experienced it, you know. And then less than a year than that, like, I'm a mama's boy at heart. And my mom passed away, and whatever was left, it fell apart, man. And we throw ourselves in other in service or in the work, man. And thank God, man, I had, like, thank goodness, man, I threw myself in the service and the work with others and the meetings, man. Like, I spoke on stages and shared at meetings for 45 minutes to an hour right after my mom died, still like feeling and like fresh, you know. Didn't miss a beat, man. And then that's all God, man. I my life, my God experiences and stuff. Like, if you don't, you know, like if the humility and the stuff that comes with that third step, all the way down to that seventh and to the forgiveness part, man. It's like when you do the more work I do with alcoholics, man, the more I work. And I'm gonna talk about the work. I'm not talking about the one, two, and the three. I'm talking about that 4 to 9.
Mm.
That 4 to 9 right there with another alcoholic, man, it's like, it does something. It makes that connection with God like nothing else. Because I stay living in a 10, 11, and 12.
Yes.
I stay living in that stuff right there.
Yep. That's what my sponsor said. We got to live in 10, 11, and 12. You know, you touched on that. I mean, so much stuff. You know, I was one of the guys, first time I went to an AA meeting, it was in rehab in upstate New York. It was 2002. My sobriety date's 2006. So I was in and out for 4 years, and it was a battle for 4 years. But for those 4 years, I was the guy, you know, walking into a meeting, checking the box, saying, hey, I'm in the meeting, sitting in the back, not participating, waiting for the right sponsor. This is all Gary's will, right? And it wasn't until something came over me in May 12th, 2006, where I didn't want to do it again. And I went into a meeting, and everything was completely different. I asked God to plead, I can't drink anymore. All I did was came in because I didn't want to drink anymore. That's all I came in for. And little did I know, I was going to start a real relationship with a higher power. I always had a relationship with my God, who I call God, and was, you know, we all have those foxhole prayers, you know, get me out of this one, I won't do this one again. Get me home tonight, I won't do this again. And you do it the very next night or next week. And, you know, but I came in, and I think that's when I was given that gift of surrender. And you're talking about stuff like that too. And it wasn't praying for Gary's will anymore. It's praying for God's will for me. Show me the way, you know, show me your will. And you mentioned, I think the first thing you said when you came on here was parts of the seven step prayer. Relieve me of the bondage of self. And that's part of my every single morning prayer. It's third step prayer and the seven step prayer. Relieve me of the bondage of self. And I'm glad you talked about working steps 4, 5, and 6 and to 9, right? Because that's where I think for me, I'm speaking for myself, that's where sort of the transformation really started to begin, because it's the first time in my life that, you know, things that happened to me, things that I had done, that I was going to keep in my back pocket and keep in my closet for the rest of my life and never share with anybody else. And some of the things that I saw or some things that happened, I still couldn't even do it because I felt like I was even like I was ratting people out, ratting my dad out, like things that happened, things I saw. And I had this gift of surrender. I was like, you know what? Because for those 4 years, whatever I was doing wasn't working. I'm going to do whatever they tell me this time. And so when I wrote down that fourth step, Garrett, and I wrote all that shit down and poured it all first time, you know, you start working on yourself, man, right? Like this is, you said it too, all the shit that's happened to you, all the stuff that you have put yourself through, man, like you have flipped it all. And I say this a lot, you flipped it all on its head and you're using it. Your story is a blueprint for someone else and you are living in service. You know, and that's the other part, right? Like, talk about this. I'm so glad you said the triangle too, right? Like the service, you live in service, it seems to me, every 24/7, you know, and you turn your will over and you turn your will over to the care of God is however you want to understand him, right? But I came in, like I was saying, I just didn't want to drink anymore. And it took me a while, even though I was going through the steps that you had that spiritual awakening. And now I have this relationship and it's completely different from where I was in those foxholes, you know, and I get to try to help someone today, you know, and that's a good thing, but I'm praying for it. You know, that's part of my prayers too. You know, please let me help one person today. Like, I mean, there's so much you said, it's incredible and it's so powerful, you know, but you feel the feeling of less than too, right? Like you just wanted to get a level playing field and mire the shit out of you. You wanted to clean it all up too. So you felt like you're on that level playing field, but you also touched upon, man, how am I going to ever have a relationship with my family, my daughter, my dad, my mom? I know it's after those going through those steps. Can you tell us about some of those moments about getting those relationships back?
I'm going to tell you, I will tell you about those relationships and about getting those back. And like the magic of the thing about doing the work here and the magic that happens while you do it is that you don't even notice this magic that's happening, man. 100%. My dad comes to that treatment center. Things happened in my daughter's life and she moved in with my dad. I'm getting the good grace of my stepmom and my dad and my daughter. And this is it is I didn't talk to my mom for, I talked to her, but I didn't see her for like a year or so. Sometimes the ones you love the most are the ones you have to stay away from. I rode that Metrolink for like 5 hours from Whittier to Antelope Valley for 20 minutes, hour visit tops. By the time I get from there to the house, 30 minutes and right back to the Metrolink because I only have a 12-hour pass or 10-hour pass or whatever, and I have to ride it right back. And I did that every other week, man, just to spend that 30 minutes with my daughter, man, so I can get more. My words started meaning something. To where I used to tell my dad and my daughter and my mom and anybody around me that I'll be there. You can count on me. Don't worry. And you couldn't count on me. And my word meant nothing. And what I learned in the 12 steps is that your word has to mean something. And it starts with that relationship I have with my sponsor and about telling him how I'll be there and how I got that first commitment. And I said that I'll be there. And if I couldn't, for some reason, that I call and let you know and not leave you hanging. See, I didn't know that all that's that Jedi stuff. I didn't know that little bit of stuff right there was teaching me how to see that I begin to create the relationships inside the program while I was at this treatment center and making my mouth meet my feet, you know, those actions. And by the time it came around, like my dad came there and I meet him and I didn't have for like 3 years, like, you know, until like I had like 2 years or so that I get a driver's license. I get dropped off or I get a ride out there or I get take the Metrolink and I just said I come and I was uncomfortable and I just whatever it is, man. Like I made a commitment to myself that I wouldn't drive until I got that driver's license. And I found any which way I could to get there to go see my daughter and spend that time with my dad the same way that I went to a meeting and the same way that I met with my sponsor. Like they have that saying that that the program, I came in with no family, and then I made the AA was my first family, and by me standing up from that, now I got two families, because now it has given me my family back. And it's really just of the work I put in and how bad I wanted it. Like I got that commitment, and and he tell you something like if you're accountable to a meeting, you're accountable to like a service commitment. And why can't you be accountable to your family and to your and to your kids' lives? I went to like man, like I didn't miss nothing. When it came to my daughter, like I was there, like games, practice, all she had to do was say, "Hey, Dad, can you?" I'm there. My dad, like it built that little bit. Like my dad, I'd be there. Like Christmases, birthdays, 4th of July, Easter, whatever it was, when I got me an invite or something like that. And they, our dad, that's just good. I was there, and I wasn't. I'm gonna tell you this, man. I wasn't late. I wasn't coming in hot. I wasn't late. I wasn't like I was there, and with dignity and grace of how best I could spend this time with this person that I want to be with right now. I remember my dad at that treatment center when I gave him that hug. Like I felt like so distant and so like so far from him. And that 7 years, 8 years that it took for me to change all that around, he got to see me transform into a person, man. He always probably wanted, always to the stun, he always wanted to see me. I remember sitting there at my dad's house, and sitting there, and he's a big sports fan and guy, and I'm sitting there, and he looked over at me, and he tells me that maybe, and even as we're guys, we don't want, we always, and I talked about it earlier, like that. He told me that thing that, man, you just, sometimes you just need to hear it from certain people. My dad looked over, man, and he said, "I love you." And it was just out, just like just on a in between a commercial on a Sunday morning football game, and he meant it, right? And I don't know about you, but like for so long I was out there, and see, my biggest thing is I thought that didn't I wasn't see first. I'm gonna tell you this is first of all, I didn't love myself enough.
Yeah.
And second of all, I really didn't think my dad ever loved me again. And there is, he said it. And the thing is I didn't end up working with me and stuff like this of with the self-esteem and building myself up that man, that he felt it, man. I felt it. And he meant it. Man, that's a God moment right there, right? Boom.
Was just about
But
to say.
I was scared. See that? Yeah, I got a couple years, I come out of treatment. I'm living in a different town. Like all this stuff. I'm at this dance. I got my chugging buddy with me, and I tell you, man, like my mom. I talk to her, but like I use and I drank with my mom every single time. So like I'm really like it. And it's really like scary. Like, are you strong enough?
Yeah.
Anybody that's in that scenario that has or that goes back into that scenario where people may be drinking or using or something like that. And I was at this dance, and I was really like I was suffering from withdrawals from my mom. I wanted to see my mom, man. Thing is that I had shame and guilt because of the way I grew up and where she lived. That I felt like shame. I didn't want to have anybody go with me, right? I was embarrassed, right? I told my trudging buddy, like, you get somebody close, an accountability partner type thing. He's like, what's bugging you, man? What's bugging you, man? I'm like, man, I really want to go see my mom, I'm scared, I'm afraid, like, drugs are gonna be there, like all that stuff, right? Just because I got clean and sober doesn't mean that, the world did, right? He's like, I'll go with you. And he charged with me over there, man. I think it was like stuff like that changed it for me. That maybe dang that, man. I'm all right. No, I'll
Another
be all.
gun.
Yeah, another God move, man. And I'm gonna tell you what, that little girl, man, took a lot of work. It took a lot of work because it took years before she would trust me. She'd call me 20 times in a row talking about, "Dad, are you for sure coming?" Still after, like, I'm gonna be there. Like, I would still be there, but she'd be like, "Where are you? Where are you? Where are you?" Because I destroyed her life that much, man. Because I could for so long. I tell her I'll be right back, and I won't. And I go on a 3-year stint to prison, right? And this day, man, my daughter, man, she knows that if she asks her dad to be there, I'm there, 100%. And my mom, like I said, I goes back with my mom and stuff. Like when my mom, and all this stuff happened with my mom and stuff. I felt like, man, I left the hospital with my mom, and my mom wasn't very communicative and talked that much, but she was getting a stent in her heart, and I was at the hospital to pick her up, and my son ran out the room and ran down the hallway, and I went after him, and I chased him up, and I chased him, right, and I grabbed him, and I turned around the hallway, and I looked back, and my mom's in the doorway, and she's looking at me. My mom had the beautifulest blue eyes you ever saw, man. For a guy, because that's my mom, she had the beautifulest blue eyes I ever saw, man. And she never said it, but boy, did her eyes say it. And when I go there, and I'm gonna tell you, my mom was still in all that active addiction. I don't know, because you know what? I didn't pay attention if she was. I just know I felt that any time she was with me or around me, she was not drunk or loaded. And what she did around that time is none of my business, honestly. And I just know that every time I pick her up and we go out to dinner or I take her somewhere, that goddamn, man, I hug her and we say, "I love you, man." And man, she knows I meant it. She knew that 100% of me showing up and being an accountable person, that was just like the best thing ever, man.
Amazing, talk about the promises and the things that we do get, right? And it's all the stuff that you can't put a price on. And you just named them all: accountability, trust, integrity, gift of showing up. Like, just that act to show up is sometimes all you need, and to be trusted. Now, I say this often, man, like, those are the things I didn't have, and now you're at a place where you help people. When I get a phone call from someone I know or someone I don't know, now I'm kind of out here a little more for the world to see, if you will, and it's a stranger reaching out to me on a DM or a friend saying, "Hey, man, can you meet me? I'm struggling with something. I think you can help me." Like, I'm filled with such gratitude because, I need to remember where I was 18 years ago, because I. Not only was I not getting those phone calls, I was wasn't even on the radar. I was the last person any of these people would have ever thought. And just like we see in the rooms, right? People completely changing their lives around, complete 180 from where I was 18 years ago. Now to be, a source of help, of inspiration. And you said it so many times too, like, this was, Gary didn't get sober. I was given sobriety by my higher power. I was given this gift of sobriety. And back to the prayers too. When I was early on, I was struggling, and I had a guy say, "Hey, listen, what's Jedi, one of the Jedi mind tricks. You probably know this one. Put your shoes underneath your bed." All right, why? Because the first thing you do is you hit your knees and you say a prayer and ask for your higher power to give you the gift of sobriety today. And if you stay sober tomorrow, at the end of the day, thank him for giving you the gift of sobriety. And I did that, May 13th, 2006, and I made it that night. And I went, "Holy shit, I didn't drink today. Like, maybe that worked, man. I'm gonna do that again tomorrow." And that is still part of my prayers. That is part of my prayers to this day. And when I start them, they've evolved. There's a little more praying, and there's a little more to it, but those are part of it to this day. I've said this so many times too. Like, dude, when the phone rings, Garrett, like, I am instantly filled with gratitude, because I used to not be able to answer the phone. Every time that phone rang, I was afraid who was calling me, who was chasing me down, what did I do? Even like into sobriety, it took me a long time. And now when that phone rang, I don't even have to look at it. In fact, I wish I didn't have caller ID so I can just answer. I wish I don't like even having a caller ID, but man, what a story, bud. It's just absolutely incredible. When did it dawn on you, or has it has it dawned on you that you are just a beacon of light and hope from your higher power? I mean, he speaks through you. You're God. I mean, it's just, it's clear as day. You know, you really, truly, authentically, sincerely live it every single day. When did it, was there ever a time, if it did, where it sort of the shift when he said, you know what, Garrett, I'm going to help other people with this. I'm going to, for lack of a better word, kind of run with it.
I think that for a person like me is that, like I sort of got taught or showed this little remedy here in the rooms and the sponsorship and fellowship and service and all this stuff and meetings. And I don't know, it's good. I am a beacon of light. I am a pillar to the community of recovery and stuff like this. But what it is, man, is that I'm still sick.
Yeah.
And there's two things I'll bring up, man, is I keep doing it because I don't want to, because I don't ever want to forget.
Yep.
The gifts of recovery to get away and the gifts of recovery around here. And I don't want the thing that the second thing that all of us have in common is a forgetter to come across and be like, fucking forget about, like, damn, like where I come from. And like, you know, to eat okay. Now, and eating out the trash cans, the prison, the jail, the, you know, the homelessness, the degrading, the needles. That's who I am deep down, you know? And I stay here ingrained in this work, you know, and carrying that message of hope, man, because it's the only way to stay selfless, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. The main thing around here is I get too much of me and I'm in trouble. I just try to, man, constantly give, you know, not think of me. And the only way to do that is to help other people, you know, and through helping people, all the stuff that we just talked about, man, is really what brings me all of it, you know, the joy and God and all this stuff, man. And now it's just like, that's the way of life. That's to me, it's just that's my way of life and what I'm ingrained in doing. It's nothing about it. If it's not your thing, it's cool, but it's mine. And people know.
Yeah, you described it earlier in a way that I've never heard it described before, as far as service and helping another human being. As you said, that when you're talking to another guy, whether it's in your truck or in a park or wherever you are in a meeting and you're going through the book or you're going through the steps, you're taking him through the steps, that a layer is removed that gets you closer to your higher power, who you call God. I've never heard it put that way. But when you said it, man, I thought it was so powerful and I think it's so true. And obviously, you know, you are a beacon of light in our community and your story is absolutely incredible. Let me ask you, I could talk to you all night, man, but let me ask you one last, we might have to do a part two and a three, but I can't keep you here all day, but let me ask you one final question. If you would, what are you telling if you bump into 16-year-old Garrett? What are you going to tell him? What's your advice for
him? Man, that's a good question, man. That's a good question right there. I like that. What's happened if I run into the 16-year-old me? I don't know if I would say anything, man. I think more or less I try to just be an example for the person to look at to. A lot of people told me stuff at that age and probably me to myself. But the greatest thing I didn't have was an example to go by. And a lot of us go by, and a lot of us, for some people, it's easy for us to be told or something to do. And I think that when they get that value, for me at 16 years old, living an undisciplined life with no good example to go by. And all I did, I was, you know, I grew up, and what I did is I grew up tagging along to these people who I thought were a great example and listening to the stuff they said and doing what they told me. And you know, no regrets. I just, you know, I definitely can't beat the crap out of them. If I had to say something to the 16-year-old me, man, I'd be like, spend more time with your mom and dad, man. Spend more time with your mom and dad.
Love that. That's beautiful, man. No one's answered it that way. I don't ask that every time, but No one's answered it that way. I think that's beautiful.
Thank you.
Garrett, where can we find you? Where can our people find you? And where's the best spot to find you?
Please, man, if you're here and you see this on social media platform on Instagram, please follow me, Garrett McLendon, on IG, Facebook, Garrett McLendon. I don't go by no aliases today or no nothing. Like, I go by my first name and my last name. Please, there's a spot on there. If there's a spot on there and you can give me a follow, man. I'm trying to, get some more followers up here, man. If there's a place I can come and share for you, please message me on IG or on Facebook or whatever platform there is, man, and introduce yourself and let me know where I got to be. Today, 100%, I'm accountable and I show up where I say I'm going to show up.
That's for sure. That's for sure. We're going to put your socials all on the
please.
Show once we can find you. Give him a follow. Give Garrett a follow. I know they're going to give you a follow after this one. Garrett, man, I am so grateful for your time today. I would love to do this again. When I come out west, we're going to meet in person, and I look forward.
That's good. I got you.
No doubt, man. No doubt.
I come out there. You let me know.
I will. I'm taking you up on that, bud.
Man, do it, man. 100%.
All right, man. Awesome. I appreciate you. God bless. Go find him. Garrett McLendon. Like I said, it's all going to be in the show notes. And man, thank you so much for your powerful message. You're helping so many people. The content you put out on top of all the talks that you do and the podcasts and everything that you do for our community is incredible. And I'm super grateful for you, man. Thanks for all that you do.
Thank you so much, man.
God bless, brother.
God bless.
Thank you for tuning in to another powerful episode of the Begin Again podcast. We sincerely appreciate your time and support. We hope that today's conversation has ignited a spark within you, affirming that recovery is not only attainable, but can also be a wellspring of strength and resilience. Our ultimate goal is to make a difference in someone's life every single day. By sharing these stories of redemption, we strive to empower you and inspire you to unlock your fullest potential, facilitate positive transformations, and contribute to creating a better future for yourself, for your loved ones, and the world at large. If you know someone who could benefit from listening to our show, please share it with them. And if you resonate with our mission and feel compelled to do so, we would greatly appreciate your support through a 5-star review, following us on Instagram, and subscribing to our YouTube channel, the Begin Again podcast. The more positive reviews we receive and the wider our message spreads, the greater our collective ability to help others realize that change is possible in their own lives. Thank you once again for being a part of our community. May you be blessed on your own journey of personal growth and transformation.